everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, sending you a message. A message of love, a message of caring, a message of, what did she call it today? She said, happy, I don't know, Chris Kwanzaa Munimus or something. Celebrating all of the holidays anyway. This is Armand DeMille with you, and we want to send you messages. But, you know, talking about messages, it comes to my attention that all things that relate to the mind is what we like to report about here on The Positive Mind, so that you could learn more and more things about what we do and why people function the way they do. And one of the things that we're dealing with is this whole idea of what's happening with texting and sexting and nexting and so on and so forth. What's happening to us, okay? Now, you would imagine I'm going to get on here and I'm going to say, oh, it's all bad for you. No, 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 it's not all bad for you. Like yesterday, I made reference in the music program about why I think people use headphones and iPods when traveling on subways, some of which are so loud that they become invasive. I got on the elevator with somebody the other day who was playing a headphone so loud. They were earbuds and they were so loud. It was rocking the elevator. But it was only an elevator ride, you know what I mean? It didn't disturb me. I was just going up a short distance. And what I thought to myself was, this person is not just blocking out the world. This person is preparing their chemistry. What we do when we put music on, and this is what we learned from our previous music shows, is we adjust our chemistry. You could change everything. Look, if a long lingering kiss can alter the testosterone in both men and women, or both kissers, that's a kiss, right? Now, what happens with what you see? If you see something visually appealing, it alters your chemistry. It could get you stimulated, get you excited, it could get you depressed. What you hear also deeply affects you. Hearing, such a fascinating, fascinating part of human conditioning. I remember the first course I ever took in school in psychology. It was so boring. The first course was the psychology of the senses. You remember that, Stephanie? They do that to you? In course psychology 101, they taught you hearing, smelling, seeing. And I said, how ridiculous. What does this have to do with psychology? Well, it turned out it has everything to do with psychology, because all of our senses, including touch, mandate, change, affect our chemistry. Everything you hear, the sound of my voice, is changing your chemistry right this minute. The music I play in between my program is meant to alter the chemistry of your body. Now, am I doing that like I'm some kind of a Wizard of Oz who's going to do this thing to you? No, but it happens. When I listen to some of the voices from the people, like if I listen to Michael G. Haskins, our engineer, his voice is perfect for the radio. And it's like a calming, soothing, it's right there. It tells me from one person to the next, I'm getting good reporting, I'm hearing a lot of love. Maybe it's because I know him. Or maybe it's because some voices convey it and some don't. Did you ever hear hysterical, frightened voices? We have a few of them here at BAI as well. Where they get, you know, really high-pitched, stringing, nervousy voices. You can't listen very long, especially if you have a guest who's like that, if you're having somebody on air. When you're listening, you can't listen too long. But listening is vital. It's become vital, especially in this society. You go out in the streets. The noise that you now hear is so profound, so strong, so filling, because they realize they can't get you by sight anymore. You've learned to train your vision so that you have selective perception. You no longer see everything they put in front of you. The advertisements are no longer there. They can't blast you with 475 advertisements, which the average person sees in an hour. You know, you won't notice them anymore. But through your hearing, they try to get you. They try to get you because it's one of the accessible things. Music is, our ears are always open for music. Our ears are always open for sound. what does this have to do with anything? Well, what it's happened to is we've gone to protect our hearing. And to protect our hearing, we have to take a trip through the whole concept of messaging. Messaging right back through the ears. I mean, that's what hearing was for. Hearing was for two things. Protecting yourself. Hark, I hear a tiger, right? Or, hark, I hear a damsel calling me. Or hark, I mean, that's part of what hearing was. Hearing was a bird tweeting for another bird, or, you know, the various sounds that birds could make to call each other of the same species, and the same thing with butterflies. And do they make sounds? About when they beat their wings, they do, you know? But there are ways through sound that animals communicate with each other. Humans communicate with each other. Do you ever wonder why children scream so loud in a swimming pool? You go to a swimming pool and suddenly it's nice and peaceful. Then suddenly 20 kids jump in and they're screaming at the top of their lungs, even when they're playing with their parents. And you wonder, what are you doing, kids? Keep it down. We're trying to rest on the side here. But what they're doing is they're practicing a skill. A skill of, if I were to get in trouble, Mama, could you recognize my voice? They are training their screaming voices to stay connected to their mothers. You know, if you're in a field of penguins, you could never tell a baby penguin from another baby penguin except by its sound. The sound that makes the mother can be a million penguins away, and she'll find you. Each of us in our screaming do that when we our voices are trained to be recognized by someone else. Training, messaging. The message we had when I was a kid, part of me grew up in the Bronx. That was my ear. No, a part of me. Some of the time we spent in the Bronx with my mother's family. A large family of people, a lot of young men in the family. And they had a whistle. They had a whistle that they used, da-da-da-da. I'm not whistling it because it would pitch in the phone, but that was the sound of it, da-da-da-da. And when that whistle was whistled, whoever was outside the house came home. You could whistle it, and it was a high-pitched whistle. You could whistle it down the block. Whoever was anywhere came home with that whistle, and everybody whistled it, except Grandma. Right? What a communication device. Well, what did we have at the beginning? You know, when you had a message, where is this leading us, by the way? It's leading us to a conversation about current messaging and what we do to try to communicate and contact each other and the result of it. Back in the old days, some of you will remember, there were telephones, but, you know, the real thing was mail, slow mail. You send a letter. Takes 3 days to a week to get to the other person. You put a stamp on it. Sometimes it was a 2-cent stamp, I remember. You send a letter. The person gets it. They open the letter. They could read it over and over again. They could hold it in their hand. Sometimes they could smell your fragrance. You know, there was something charming about letters. Charming. Your grandmother probably saved her letters wrapped in a bow from the time she was in love. Do any of you have wrapped letters anywhere? Communications from your dad to your mom, you know, they discover these letters every now and then from some great person to some other great person. Well, letters were wonderful. How many times would you ever wait for mail? Well, if you were going to college and you applied for college, as many of us did, boy, we waited for that mail. Did you get the acceptance or the rejection? Did you get the acceptance or the rejection? You know, and then the joy you would see, I got accepted, and you go running up the hill, or the despondency you would feel when they said, sorry, we can't use you, all by mail. Mail was a big thing, until people learned that they could advertise by mail. And then you started getting mail plus junk mail, mail plus third kind of mail, and so then mail didn't even become as important. That one little letter that would come in would either be bill or junk mail. Because people discovered the phone. Now, phones were beautiful. I mean, phones are really wonderful. You call somebody. They're in their bedroom. You're in your bedroom. You're going to sleep at night. You call them up on the phone. They put the phone to the ear. It's like you're whispering to them. and you whisper, oh, hi, honey, how was your day? You know, if that's the way it is, it's a boyfriend-girlfriend thing, a courting thing. You know, when you talk to each other and you whisper to each other into the mouthpiece of the telephone, and the telephone was just charming because the chemistry changed as you heard the voice of the other person. It changed you. It released different chemicals, oxytocin. You would feel bonded. You would feel all different kinds of light, lovely things, hearing the sound of the voice of the person you cared about. It was like sleeping with them, but not sleeping with them. It was a beautiful thing. Many of you can never remember this. Because as soon as the phones got away from being landed phones, and then they became remote phones, walk-around phones, cordless phones. Now, the cordless phone was okay, except as you walked around, you didn't have that intimacy anymore because you had the universe in between. You know, now instead of going through electrical wires, we were now going through satellites coming down and hitting the antenna, and then the antenna had good exchange in certain part of your house and not good exchange in other parts of your house. See, you didn't have that same intimacy, but it was good. It was still good because now you could walk around and talk to people at the same time, but then that thing got lost. Now you're walking around and talking to people, and you're doing your laundry and talking to people, and you're washing your dishes and talking to people. Whereas the other way, when you were tethered to the telephone line, you just talked to people. It was a much more intimate thing. More intimacy took place through telephone conversations before the cordless phones. Not that there's anything wrong with cordless phones, because many more contacts took place. People got to a point where they carried their cordless phone on their hip when they went outside their house. Now you could go outside your house with a phone on your hip in case your kids want to call you. And that would take you to a certain distance, and then came the invention of that wonderful thing called a cell phone. I remember I owned the first one. It was about the size of a truck. No, it was the size of a suitcase. It was this big black thing that had a phone attached to it that it was just remarkable. Remarkable that you could be so far away and in communication with people. And that, of course, got us down to what we currently have, which are cell phones, which I don't know about you, but I can't remember a single intimate phone call on a cell phone in ages. I mean, you could have... It's just not the same. When I call the dearest people to me, I ask them, would you please call me back on my landline? But, of course, you know, now many young people, they don't have landlines anymore. The thing I like about many of these cable companies offering you these triple bets is that they offer you a landline telephone along with your cable service and your high-speed service. So you get a landline, but even that landline is going through computers. Even that landline is going through the cable. It's not the same as an old landline. A regular straight telephone plugged into the wall, right? American Telephone and Telegraph, remember them? Plug my phone into the wall, and you have your phone plugged into the wall, and you talk, and it's juicy. It's beautiful. It's great. You talk to your daughter. You think you really talk to her. You talk to your son. You felt like you talked to him. The cell phone is more, I'm getting at you. I'm quickly telling you things. So then what would happen? We'd have cell phones that we would carry around, and this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking about the evolution of the human brain as it comes to communications. And you go around with your cell phones, and now you have cell phones with batteries that die. Now you have to make sure your battery doesn't die. This becomes a new threat, so you carry a cord. And you carry a cord, or you carry a spare battery, and you carry your cord, and now you're always worried about your battery dying, and you can't have too long a conversation, and where are you talking from? Can you get good cell reception? Can you not get good cell reception? So it's really a matter of just making contact. I'm making contact with you, and here it is, and it's as if you're having a real conversation, but it's not a real conversation. Because first of all, you're talking from a Starbucks cafeteria and there are 40 people around you hearing you talk. You're talking walking down the street and everybody around you hears every word you're saying. And I'm not saying this is bad. I say it's bad for danger in traffic. You know, I don't want a driver. If I get into a cab and a driver is talking on the phone, I ask him to put it down because I know how it increases my chance of getting in an accident because it's illegal, you know. But still, it's amazing. It's amazing you could walk down the street and talk to your mother in Alaska, you know, walking down a street in mid-Manhattan. Sometimes I'll sit in a window of a cafe and I'll talk to somebody who I care about in another country and I'll just hold up the phone and say, listen to the sounds of my neighborhood. Your police sirens going past and things like that. But sound becomes very, very important because the way we begin to listen on cell phones is, the way we begin to listen on cell phones begins to become, an aberration. You don't hear the person's voice anymore. You hear a fractated voice. You hear a broken voice. You know, you're dropping out. You're falling off. I can't hear you. What did you say? Say it again. You talk from, not directly into a mouthpiece, but you're talking past a mouthpiece. You're talking into the air. Not now. You're talking into the air with somebody, and you're having this thing take place. So now what takes place? People don't like it, and they don't know it, but they don't like these phones. People don't like phone quality, phone communication. They don't like it. They're in a hurry. They got to get an order passed. Call your office. Pass off an order. You get more done that way. But you want real contact. What do? So we go to emails. Hey, you could write somebody a letter. But email communication is dangerous, and I'm one of the worst at it. I do not type. I hunt and peck, and I've had such a habit of doing it for so long that I write efficiently. And by writing efficiently, I don't write softly. I leave out certain things. I'm not as kind as I would be talking on a phone. Those efficient emails they don't have any of the stuff that I really want to put in there. They don't have my feeling, my voice. And that's what happened with people. But people have decided to take emails and use them with each other. A recent article I was reading about text messaging is the new digital lipstick. You know, lipstick on the collar, it's called. And this is what came up with Tiger Woods. You know, the whole thing about Tiger Woods and the celebrity thing, he was discovered that these text messages were erotic messages written to other people that became public, that became available to his wife, that became exposed to him, and then more and more text messages and emails were traced. Every text message we ever write, every email we ever write is a matter of record forever. They are training lawyers now. The American Bar Association is offering seminars this fall for marital attorneys on how to use electronic evidence gathered from people's past text messaging, browsing history, and social networks to prove a case. You want a divorce? You get to know that you're somewhere, you have got a lawyer who is looking into, you're looking at pornography on the internet, and he's going to bring that into court to show that you're some kind of a weirdo because of whatever you chose to look at. All of that has become public. Well, because of this, of course, most email users have come to understand that messages remain on their computers even after they're deleted. Text messages are regarded as more ephemeral, but messages can remain on the sender's and receiver's phone, and even if they're deleted, communications companies store them from anywhere for days to weeks, and some of them for a very long time. Because if you're a special person, somehow they may have been alerted to save your messages. Lawyers expect the number of cases against cell phone users to keep growing. So they're training these lawyers on how to do this spying on your usage of the cell phone. Okay, so what's going on? Do we want email discoverable? Well, only write what you want public. Only write what you're afraid that you never have to be afraid of will become public. What if you want to write an erotic message to somebody you love? Well, that's your privilege. It may become public. It may one day become public. What about text messaging? Now, the last person in the world you could ever threaten with things of danger is a teenager. You can't tell a teenager, you know, 40 years from now you're going to regret that, or if there would never be a tattoo parlor. You know what I mean? People getting their bodies tattooed, and nobody says, and what about when you get tired of that? Or what about when fat replaces your muscle and that thing begins to sag, you know, that you've drawn on your shoulder? Or what about when the color runs out? You're a teenager. You live forever. This is the now. So text messaging is the big thing. Now, text messaging to me is fascinating as far as communication goes. That's a fascinating thing. You can even get to the point where you don't have to write letters, choose letters. You could choose words. The computer chooses it for you when you text to each other. The thing that's wrong with text messaging is, as I just barely do it myself, is that there is no person there. There is no heart. I'm going to backtrack a moment to email. I get very many emails, which I welcome from the listening audience. From the audience, which means listening. See, audience means listening. I get a lot of emails, but sometimes someone will send me an email that will be like 50 pages long. Print it in with no paragraphs. And they just expect me to read it and respond. Well, you know, I have these five categories of emails. Five categories of emails of whoever I love gets first choice. Whoever is an emergency gets second choice. Because if it's somebody I love who's sending me a message, I want to hear from them. They're priority in my life. You know, if you have something to say to me, oh, my son wants to call me from down, you know, let me hear from him. What's going on? Then the emergency calls. And these are people who call with emergencies about things that are happening to them. And I, as the clinician I am, have need to intercede. Okay, so those are emergency calls. They're usually brief. They're usually asking for contact. They usually want to know how to contact me, how to get to my office, so on and so forth. Then after the emergency calls of feedback. Calls of feedback I like, because when I refer somebody to someone, I like to get a feedback from them to make sure everything's going okay. I'm not even including in this junk mail. Of course, there are thousands of junk mails that come along. Some of them get kicked out. Some of them don't. And then there are these mails that people send just to send. And they send them, they'll send these very, very long tomes, very long letters, and then get angry when I don't respond. I sent you a letter and you never responded when they poured their heart out. And there's something funny about reading long emails where somebody pours their heart out in a long, long email. I don't feel the heart. I almost feel like I'm being held captive by the letter. I like to talk to people face to face. I don't like to talk to people as much that way. But going back to what happens with text messaging, and we're going to want to take your calls about this as well. Remember, it's very easy for us, we humans, to judge anything new. But what we have to figure out is what's it doing for us. You know, I mean, I don't want to judge people who text message or sext message, the other new thing. Sext messaging is where you send an erotic photograph of yourself to someone else. Take a picture of yourself. Let me see you naked. You know, you take a picture and you send it to somebody else. It's called a sext message. That's another thing that people are doing that are becoming records for other people to see. In fact, there was a case of a suicide the other day of a young girl whose photograph was sent to some boy she thought was holding private, and he took that phone, he took that thing and published it on the internet, on YouTube, the photograph of her, and he alerted everybody to it, and she committed suicide. Yeah, honest story. Thumbs. we now have to talk to this magical reversal of society, of our world, of where we came from. Remember, messaging was beating on your drums to let them know, hey, Charlie, it's time to come home to dinner, right? Sending up smoke messages, how about that? That was a nice idea too, right? Send up a little bill of fire, send up a smoke message, Charlie, time to come home for dinner. My grandmother whistling, grandfather whistling, and up in the Bronx, Charlie, time to come home to dinner. I mean, these all of these, come on, Holmes, come back, here's my whistle, here's my sound. And now we've got it based on our little fingers on these little devices. Where did all of this come from? When we get back today from our break, I'm going to tell you a story about evolution, about humans as it regards to our efforts to communicate. But keep in mind what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep love in this planet. And keeping love in this planet means never to eliminate it, or to keep it as alive as possible for as long as possible. One time I was at the Grand Canyon. I've told the story. I'm sure I'm at the Grand Canyon. I was with a group of people and an eagle came swarming down. And I'm with a group of friends, good friends, and I see this eagle coming near. But I was a photographer, so I had five cameras strapped around my body, all kinds of film, and they were Nikons. And I remember seeing the eagle and I said, boy, that would be a better shot with my 80 millimeter lens using an Agfa film would give me a better shot of that. So I switch my camera and the eagle comes swarming closer, and I switch my camera and I switch my film, and I could do this in split seconds. With I was very agile at the time, and I switched the camera and I chose out the camera. I chose a color camera with the Agfa film, and I shot it up. I picked the 80 millimeter lens on and I picked it up, and I caught the perfect picture as that eagle swooned over my head, and I got the perfect photograph of the eagle coming down. And I put down my camera and I said, wow. And my friends were all laying on the floor as if they had just seen God. They were just aghast. And I said, I got the shot. And they were still in touch with heaven. They found it so beautiful that they melted on the spot. It was like a messenger had come to them. And me, all I got was a photograph. So I decided to put my cameras down. You know, my friends, I think that happens to us a lot nowadays. There are many opportunities for us to pass things by being more efficient, by using machinery, and by closing people out, by not looking at them, by putting on headphones, by closing out the look of the person on the subway. We don't see each other anymore. You know, maybe there's nobody to look at anymore. Maybe there are no more eyes. Maybe people don't want to see you. Maybe people are afraid of it. I'd like to keep it continued, but, you know, maybe I'm just too old for this. Maybe it just means there's a next generation coming, and this generation needs less contact, more insulation. Well, I hope not, but it may be the way we have to go. But when we come back, my friends, I'm going to tell you a story about the human thumb. Things you won't believe. And of course, we will be taking your calls today at 212-209-2900. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, a little music for the season and some exciting new stuff.
Sorry about that.
Hey, is it unfair for there to be a band of photographers waiting outside your house just because you've made yourself somewhat famous? This is Armand DeMille. By the way, that music is The Little Drummer Boy from Brent Lewis, Jungle Bells. If you want to get yourself a decent Christmas album, Brent Lewis has been a friend of WBAI, donated many albums to us. Jungle Bells. Very nice Christmas if you're going to put on seasonal music. Back to this. Is it fair? You know, is it fair that they're out there with photographs chasing you around, cameras chasing you around? Well, you step into fame, you know what happens. You get yourself known. I mean, if you look at me on the internet, you're going to find 5,000 some hundred number of references to me in all my form. Once you make yourself public, you make virtually everything public, and the new world that we have out there is saying, I'm going to make a living by finding information about everybody who's famous and then presenting it to them, as I'm sure they did with some of the other stars who have been exposed recently, and telling them, unless you give me money, I'm going to put this information out there. This is the new world we're in. We're in a world of everybody's becoming either somebody who makes news or somebody who digs into news. Is that unfair? I don't know. Is it unfair for a catfish to eat scavenged food at the bottom of a river? You know, is it unfair for a leech to try to suck for blood? That's the way they're born. That's what we've developed. You know, we developed leeches. We developed catfish because we need somebody to clean up. So maybe you need somebody to tell the politicians and the other people, and, you know, you watch your act a little bit once you decide to make yourself public. It's not so much fun. I know some people who are very famous people, and they travel in covered circles. You know, they protect themselves everywhere they go because they're afraid they're going to get jumped on by people. And not just jumped on, can I have your autograph, but jumped on, hurt, assaulted. And it comes with the turf. In fact, I met with a group of them the other day, and I said, and they said, you know, it just becomes where we only become each other's friends because we know that's the only place we're safe. And unless you're dying to be seen, you know, and want to be seen for some reason or other, you're basically hiding out in your own little world. So isn't it funny that celebrity brings you isolation? For many people, that's painful. But now let's go back. Hey, by the way, our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. I would love to receive some of your calls today. I like talking to you when we have these times in between the marathons, which we run frequently to raise money here for WBAI. But let me talk to you about opposable thumbs. Why opposable thumbs? What has happened with these children who are learning to use their thumbs? Stephanie, I need you online for a moment. Tell me about that little girl. What did she win? Here we go.
This little girl in South Africa, who was 13, actually did a project and was trying to see what happens to kids that use their thumbs for PlayStations. So it was really a very kind of silly research project, but she came up with the fact that a lot of kids have blisters, get red and sore from overuse of the thumbs. That's the only thing I could come up with if in terms of any consequence to our use of thumbs.
So far, right?
So far.
Interesting thing. I mean, it's a fascinating thing, a study on using your thumbs. Now, your thumbs have a great deal of meaning. It was, if not for opposable thumbs, we have what we call prehensile thumbs. A prehensile tail, you know, is a tail that grabs, right? The difference, the lemurs were supposedly our ancestors. We descended from a tree similar to the lemurs, and they had a prehensile tail, and so somewhere behind us in our coccyx we have a little bit of a tail left over, all of us humans. I wonder if the expression catch a piece of tail, if that's what it means. It means this little thing that we all carry with us. But tail, you know, no longer useful, but prehensile thumbs, very useful. shared by many primates, but what does it mean, opposable thumbs? An opposable thumb is a thumb, wait, I'm going to read it to you directly, is a thumb where each finger, the thumb, could reach every one of the other four fingers and make contact with it on the same hand. So notice your thumb can touch the other four fingers. Very few animals can do that. Very, very few animals. I mean, you think about most of them, they're just kind of flat-footed, you know? But very few other animals can do it. Opposable thumbs are kind of what separated us humans from the primates. Now, the simians and the prosimians, they have it, right? And let me tell you who else hasn't. So any animal with opposable thumbs has that flexibility with his thumbs, could text message. Can you imagine? Can you imagine some nice little, your little animal? They found that an opossum has opposable thumbs on his feet. So an opossum, when fighting, you know, opossum are known for fighting with certain things like snakes and stuff like that. They have this weapon in their back feet, which is an opposable thumb, so they could grab with it. Apes, gibbons, old world monkeys, tarsiers, lemurs, giant pandas, five clawed fingers plus an extra long sigmoid bone that, although not really a finger, works like an opposable thumb. They have six fingers, in effect. You ever want to know if somebody's a giant panda? Look at their hand, and then look at their fur. Koalas, opossums, and many polydactyl cats. When a cat has six toes, both the innermost and the outermost pinky toes may become opposable. So there are six-toed cats. Does your cat have six toes? Five-toed cats? Nah, what kind of cats do you have? They probably couldn't text message. They probably still could text message, even with five toes, right? So our prehensile thumb, our opposing thumbs, are very important. The thing that I find important about it is when you get arthritis and you start feeling pain in your thumbs, the first place is in your thumbs. And that is the place that becomes the target for most arthritis as you develop it over time. Is it because you use it so much? Or is it because we've, you know, maybe it's that magical joint we have? So eventually what's going to happen is people are going to start texting. And even me, I can tell you, I've done texted myself. I've been texted and I've texted back and I see my thumbs are working, and I could say to myself, oh, what's happening to me? I'm sending a message to somebody, and I'm not sending the love. I can't include love in this text message. I just can't. Let me ask you something, Stephanie. You and your daughter text message. Here's a question for you.
Not anymore.
Not anymore? Why?
I took texting away from her.
Why is that?
She was doing it too much. It was interfering in schoolwork and things at school. So
things will stay with me a minute.
Okay.
You noticed as a mother that the amount of text messaging was really interfering with her function.
She couldn't resist it. People that would text her, she had that compulsion to text back. And when she was doing it in school, I said, that's it. And she asked me, she said, please take it away. I can't do it. I can't control it.
So the text messaging would come in. So the text message comes into you and you see the light lighting on your cell phone and you're getting a text message and you read it and you're sitting there in a classroom. And in classes, they don't allow you to text message anymore, right?
That's the point. It is happening in the classes.
You're able to do it under your...
Yes. And how can all those teachers handle 1,000 kids? It's really hard, the messages and the phones and the use at school. Yeah.
So it seems that what eventually is going to happen is they're going to have little screening devices for phones. When people go in, you drop your phone. When you leave, you pick up your phone, you know? And then there's going to be pallets. And they're going to invent things that people carry. Because I know the next line of computers coming out are going to be these small little pallets that are going to be things that you could fit just about in your pocket. And it's going to do everything that your computer used to do, including all your phone stuff as well. What a world. What a world. The teacher is no longer a teacher. You know what the teacher should do? The teacher should teach via text messaging. You should have group text messaging. The teacher could say, and when the lemurs, and then you could all read that on your phones, use the phones during your class, be creative. The thing I wanted to ask you, though, when you were communicating with your daughter, is it possible to really get the feeling of love between mother and daughter on a text message?
Well, I think if you choose the certain words and you know the person, I think you can conjure up the feeling. I don't think it's completely absent if your intention is just to send a kind of affectionate message. There are things that people probably send to each other.
So in the middle of a day, would you text message your daughter, I love you?
No.
No. It's not, more informational, right?
Yes.
That's what I would think. Thanks.
Right. But others do.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you. So is it all bad? No. Is it all good? Yes. Of course, you're going to get on the phone and you're going to tell me how much you hate it. But I'd like you to get on the phone and tell me what you think about it and how you use it and what it makes difference it makes in your life. Because we're changing, my friends. Remember, everything we do changes our mind. Every step we take changes our chemistry. Everything we hear changes our mind in some way. We're learning so much through imaging that we've been able to do with neuroscience, be able to see our brains functioning. Everything is reacting. And we used to think it was nothing. But we're always learning, we're always growing, we're always changing. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. We'll take.
Hold on.
Yep, I got somebody there. Hi there. Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. Thanks.
This is a fun conversation because I just got a smartphone. And I remember being in the office last year, and all my coworkers were just like, they would just stare at their phones for the whole, you know, while we're at work. And I used to be very critical of them. I was like, what's wrong with them? Why do they stare at their phones all the time? And I just recently got myself a smartphone because I was always behind on my emails. I was not able to catch up with my emails and messages and respond to people. So I got a smartphone so I was going to be able to be on top of my email more. And a new world just opened up to me, and I'm really enjoying it. And we both got smartphones with my husband, and we started using text, you know, for the first time. I'm 37. And I used to have text before, but I didn't used to use it as often as I do now. And I don't quite agree with what you say about the love in texting. I keep in touch with my husband throughout the day through texting, and I just really feel close to him by that.
Well, that's really wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. Let me ask you something else, and this is going to sound judgmental, but it's not. Mm-hmm. You do this while you're working, right?
I know, it's bad, right?
No. See, I knew you were going to say that. But you do it while you're working, and how much would you say of the people around you who work in the office that you work in, how much time do you think they spend with their phones doing text messaging, searching, smartphoning in one form or another?
Well, it's hard to tell.
Why would you do anything else?
I don't know about the others, but I work with people. I'm a cave worker, so sometimes in between appointments.
You're a cave worker?
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, if we kind of do social work, but if you don't have a social worker degree, you're not allowed to call yourself a social worker.
Oh, caseworker. Okay.
Yeah, caseworker.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. So sometimes people are late for appointments. You have to wait in the car. You sometimes, you're in the office waiting for a phone call. Like, it's not really. It's like when if I didn't have a smartphone, I would just be sitting in the car.
Okay, now let me ask you something. You get paid by the hour, right? Now I'm not gonna judge you, I promise. But you get paid by the hour, right? And you get paid a lot by Medicare.
No, not really.
Not you. Okay, what I've learned is a lot of Medicare beneficiaries spend a lot of time waiting for cases. A lot of Medicare providers spend a lot of time waiting, and those people are spending a good 40 to 50% of their time text messaging their buddies, which is, in a funny way, taking 40 to 50% of the cost of Medicare. It's it's a funny thing, because they're sitting there waiting to get the jobs, and of course they're not standing up and saying, hey, how about me, because they would rather be on the phone talking to their friends. They would much rather be sitting there looking like you're doing something. And I see it all around me. I see people texting everywhere.
I agree with you that these devices are very distracting.
But not only the devices, I see people who tell me about their jobs where they spend their time shopping on the on their computers. And they're shopping. Yes. They spend their time on Amazon. And, and they just shop instead of doing their work.
So
I wonder if the new world is telling us the following. The idea of work being an eight-hour imprisonment no longer works. We no longer allow that. You may pay me for 8 hours, but I'm going to steal my own time. You used to let me have smoking, which was in between, and I would smoke a cigarette in between, and I would take my time that way. Now you don't give me that anymore, so now I'm taking my time back. And I think of possibly what's happened in this world is that the whole model of working doesn't work anymore. It's gotten to where people can't, but they're impatient. They don't want to be sitting by. So they're messaging.
Yes, I agree with you that the whole model of, 8 hours a week, I don't find it very human, to be honest. It's you know, you sit in an office and you're not always... one of my best friends is French, and she used to complain about, you know, the American 9-to-5 schedule. She used to tell me, I go to the lab and I do what I have to do when I have to do it. She would never clock in and out, like she would never assign her hours, but she would tell me that. But I get my work done. When I'm in there, I'm working. If I don't have anything to do, I'll just stay home. But she used to get very upset about seeing others sitting there from 9 to 5 in front of the computers, and they're just chatting or just wasting time. And, you're saying, it's somehow true. Like, if you have something to do, you go and get it done. But if you're in a downtime and there's not a lot to do, your paperwork is done, and sometimes you can be also researching for things that are related to the job on the phone, on the smartphone.
Sure you can. Sure you can as well. But, you know, if a boss decided to call an employee in and said, show me your cell phone, and he looked at the times and date stamps of when calls were made, he would be able to say to that person, give me that money back. Would be able to say, imagine that. Imagine if we looked at our own phones and we saw how much text messaging we did when we were getting paid a salary, and the boss came to us and said, okay, you spent an hour and 27 minutes talking to other people that was not job-related. We're going to deduct that amount from your salary. It's fair. And now you do as much as you want, and we'll just take your phone and we'll use that as a way of tracking how much you've done. Because I've heard of bosses firing people for texting lately. Lately, they're saying, yeah, I see people texting. They're getting on the list of people that we will let go because he sees that they're stealing his money. They believe he's stealing his money. It should be fair. It should be, okay, boss, I turned in my phone. I had an hour and 27 minutes today. I'll give you the money back for that. That would be fair. I'd be nice and honest, if you only get paid a short amount of money. I talked to my husband, and we loved each other for 10 minutes on the phone today. Let me give you $5. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Time for one more call if we have it there. Michael, hi.
Hi, I'm fine.
Hi.
I'm calling. I just want to say that my comment, I'm a registered nurse. I've been nursing for 9 years. Uh-huh. And my comment is that definitely people should evaluate what they're doing. They should think about the morality of it. I can remember several years ago, as a charge nurse on night shift, I had a nurse come to me stating that her patient was not at his normal, or as we say, baseline. So the patient as we went through the throughout the day, throughout the charting, we noticed that the nurse never administered his medications. His blood pressure was high. She didn't report it. She didn't act on several different things, and she let him sleep all day. So by letting him sleep, you can't evaluate neurologically where somebody is. And he had a stroke, and the patient eventually was transferred to another unit, an ICU unit. He never regained consciousness. And the nurse that had him on day shift that didn't give his medications is one nurse that was well known for playing with his cell phone, text messaging her boyfriend all day. And I think that some of the callers that call in or people that are listening that minimize text messaging and interacting with your loved one on the phone, if it's not an emergency, you don't need to be on the phone. And common sense is, as an adult, you should have good judgment. What I do is I minimize the temptation. I cut my phone off during work, or I put it on vibrate and put it in a locker. Sometimes I've had it in my pocket, but most of the time I try not to even have it on me, because if somebody truly needs to get in touch with you, they should have your work number. They can call your job.
I hear you, and you make a very, very solid point, especially when you're in a field as critical as that. But really, maybe it's just the ethic of anybody who works.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You don't get paid for personal time. You get paid to do your job.
You get paid for unless the agreement is made. I like the agreement. Turn in your cell phone. Let's see how many hours we're going to dock you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But not in your case. Thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Fascinating. I see now the phones are lit up and lots of people would like to make comments about it. But we don't have the time. I'll be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. We have a special guest, Dr. Harold Gershel, yes, who's talking about the addicted brain. Thank you. I'll be back with you tomorrow. You go to WBAI.org. If you want to send me one of those emails, it's Armand@thepositivemind.com.